Welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message.
We are going to get going here. One second. All right. Well, we are starting a brand new series, which I love doing. I love starting things. Finishing things, not so much. But starting them, big fan. Love it. My wife laughs. Yes. So our series is called What's the Deal With? And it comes from this place of two of my favorite comedians. Anyone here fans of the show Seinfeld? All right? Love it, right? Created by Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David. And if you don't know, Larry David has a show called Curb Your Enthusiasm, one of my favorites. But the character in Seinfeld of George Costanza, also my favorite, is based off the person of Larry David. So when you watch Seinfeld, what George is doing, what he's saying, is just what Larry David is in real life. Hence why I like the show Curb Your Enthusiasm, because it's the George Costanza show, all right? And what made them essentially famous, especially Jerry Seinfeld in his stand-up career, is it's called observational humor, where he will take things that we experience, that many of us have feelings about or frustrations about, and he's able to put language and words to things that we might think but we don't say for a whole host of reasons, one of them being that we are a civil society. Well, some of us are very part of a civil society, right? And so he would say things like, what's the deal with airline food? I nailed it, right? That's my Jerry Seinfeld impersonation. I worked on it for a long time, all right? And you're like, oh, yeah, airline food, it's frustrating. It's small. It's not good. We say it's free, even though we pay hundreds of dollars for tickets. And then you laugh, right? Because you're like, oh, it's so true. And this is our entire series is based on that story and this one. When we planted this church, coming up on 10 years in deer hunting opener, so that is November, and that is the most northern Minnesota thing of all time, that I'm trying to figure out a timeline by, like, deer hunting opener. I apologize to anyone who's from Texas. So, where am I going? We planted this church 10 years ago, and we were in a high school auditorium, which was great for people who came to church. And was anyone on the setup teardown team? Can you raise your hand? Yeah, okay. It took us 3 to 4 hours from before service and after service, not including the service, to get ready for church and tear down church. And we had probably about 40 to 50 volunteers getting things up and ready. It was a lot of work, and it was an exorbitant amount of money. And so early on, we started, we put together a team of people to look for a building or a property or something so we could get the ball rolling so down the road we could have, like, a destination. So the people on the team were people part of our church who were business leaders or purchased real estate. They had some sort of expertise, and it was a great meeting, and we went through our objectives, our goals, and we laughed, we cried, best of times, worst of times, and we get done. A couple weeks later, I get an email saying, hey, Chris, can we get a coffee, and which can either go really good or it can go really bad, right? And this one wasn't good or bad, and he informed me that him and his church are going to be transitioning out of the life of a church. And he was very kind, he's very generous, and I kind of sensed it coming because at the time it was either the beginning of the end or maybe like the middle of the beginning of the end of my evangelicalism. And I was deconstructing my faith, and I was still in that process, but there was things that we said and we did that I just no longer, as the pastor of that church, could do. And started changing pronouns of God, started rarely talked about marriage and talked about partnership that was more reflective of our community, and talked about whiteness and justice. And him and his family were at a different place, which is fine. And he's like, we're just not going to, we're going to transition out. And he goes, but you know what really kind of put us over the edge, Chris, is at that meeting about the building, because he was on this team, you didn't start with prayer. You didn't pray. And it occurred to me, does Chris, that's me, not want the blessing of God on this new building? And I listened to him, I'm a professional. I can look people in the eyes and be polite. But in my head, I'll never forget it, because I began the process of, I say this all the time, what we think about God matters, right? What we think about God does not just shape how we worship or what we think. It shows and informs how we show up in conversations, how we show up at work, how we show up in rooms. And in this moment, him saying, you didn't pray, therefore you don't want the blessing of God, I started, and I didn't say this out loud, but in my head, I'm like, oh, so God is over our church, or actually not over our church, over whatever the future unnamed, unknowing building of our church, and God has a blessing. That's great. But God is holding it, not opening his hand, all right, or their hand, because God is waiting for words to come out of my mouth. So God needs, this is literally what I was thinking about, God needs my diaphragm to fill up with air and then push it out, and my tongue to manipulate the air so that I can make noises and sounds that other people can hear, and not just other people can hear, but God needs to hear it. And so do we need English? Why not Hebrew or Aramaic? Does God know what English is? I bet God knows what English is. Oh, but God is withholding blessing because I didn't say the right words at the right time to get the best of God. And then it clicked. I'm like, oh, that is where this person's at. And I could see how offended they were if I didn't pray. Now, where Chris was at the time is that prayer was not just this thing that I verbalized. Prayer was this life I lived. I'm giving all my energy to what I believe divine love is asking of me, that I'm giving of myself continually. So my prayer isn't just me saying it. It's me embodying it. It's me extending it, me including it, me living it. And he needed something. We were probably in similar places, but he was looking for something I couldn't, because he believed that God wouldn't bless us because we didn't do the right things. This is the whole series, is that there's things in our life when it comes to theology or God or the Bible or church or gender or pleasure or sex, definitely money, family systems, politics, right? Like, how, do you like showing up for events or not? There's all these things that we carry with us of values, truths, preferences, grief, trauma, anger, joy, that we still carry them with us. And do we feel like we can put language to it? And if we do have language with it, do we feel safe that we can process it with other people? Because if we, at times, we feel like we're honest about what we feel, what we believe, how we voted, whatever it might be, we are hesitant to share because of what people might observe about us. And we just want to be included, right? Which leads me to my next story. There is this, there's a story in the Bible in the book of Joshua, which is in the Old Testament. And right before this, there's a guy named Moses, right? He's a banger in the Bible, right? A big part of the Bible, of the Hebrew story. And he went to Pharaoh and said, let my people go. And Pharaoh's like, I'm not a big fan of that. I'd prefer to keep it here. The business model is great for me, right? And Moses is like, I disagree. And they have this conflict, and Moses leads them across the Red Sea, leads them into this new land where for 40 years they're wandering around trying to get into this promise, this future reality that God is inviting them into. But Moses made some mistakes, and so Joshua is like picking up the slack. And in chapter 5, Kier, do you mind throwing it up there? In chapter 5, Joshua has, or actually right before Joshua 5, Joshua says the generation before him wasn't so much evil as much as misled. And he's like, it's time for a new generation of warriors, is what they imply, a new generation of men, right? And they're going to take the promise, the covenant that God gave them, and they're going to reclaim it for themselves. And so they do what God asked Abraham them to do, which is circumcision. So this whole new generation of men get circumcised, like, together, right? And if you are aware of circumcision, of flesh being taken away, being cut, right? You need time to recover. So they're like, we're men, we're a new generation of men. They're like, but we need like 2 weeks to recover, right? So the men are like, we're just going to chill for a little bit, right? And once they recover and they're like, oh, we're men again and we are warriors, they're going to go out to battle. And Joshua's leading them to battle. And where they're going, and I'm going to get to this in a second, where they're going is to this place called Jericho. And Jericho is this well-defended city that is surrounded by these giant walls, and in the famous story, they march around it 7 times, and Rahab helps them, give them some information, gives them access. Well, they march around 7 times, it comes all crumbling down, and then the Hebrew army murders everyone. Like it says, they believe that God told them to kill everything, animals, entire families, everything. No one is left except Rahab and her family. And the reason this is important, to give you context of what's going to happen here, is geographically speaking, where Jericho sits is right before this incredibly lush piece of land. And in this piece of land is where you can grow enough food to feed an entire army. And that might not sound really sexy or really cool, but it is strategically so incredibly important, because if you can't feed an army, you can't fund an army, because you have to feed the army and you have to feed their families. And other local farms or smaller farms or places you could feed a family to, maybe three, but if then they have to go off to war, it's harder to feed everyone. If more people need to be fed because their husbands are off fighting war, it gets problematic. So if you can feed an entire army and family and fund it, then you have a very, very strategic option. And so this is where Joshua and the new generation of warriors are moving. And so like it's like this war on the mind, this warrior, we're going to go take the promise of God, what God gave us, right? And as they're moving towards this, they run into this. And they see a soldier. They see an object. They see something that is strong in the middle of this place. And they do what all of us do. It is a very human thing to other people, right? And that's what Joshua does. He's like, hey, what team are you on? We have a new generation of men, right? Or are you with one of those Jericho people, right? And what team are you on? And he says, this angel says, I'm not on any team. I'm not telling that story. In fact, you're in this new story, this new place, and it's this holy place. And holiness means this holy other, this new way of operating or doing things. And in the tradition of the Bible, when you're in this place of newness, he says, take off your sandals, which is a way of saying, what brought you here? The tradition that brought you here, what informed you to be here, and if you know the story of the Hebrew people, the trauma that brought you here, he's saying it is a part of your story, but there's still something new to be stepped in. And to step in it with taking your sandals off, to step on this holy place, this new place, it's all around us. He's saying, I don't want you just to see it. I want you to embody it. I want it to consume you. I want you to experience what the newness is. And it is such a rich story. Because we other people all the time. If you remember your dating days, right? Like, well, so yeah, I met Nikki when I was 13. And so I didn't have the internet then because I'm old, right? And so, but I imagine the dating days, you meet someone and then you creep on them, right? And you go and you look on their social medias and you see what they commented, what they liked, what they shared. And probably more importantly, what didn't they share? What didn't they comment on? How come they didn't like that post if they're friends with this? And who are they connected to? And you're doing all these things. We do this maybe someone that you're attracted to. Maybe you do this when you find out there's a new boss. You find out someone who's a new friend. Whatever it might be, we want to get information because we want people on our team. And what is our team? Your sports team? Who you voted for? The things you're passionate about? And we want to associate with people. I'm not saying this is bad. For some of you, and for some of us, this is a survival tactic. And that is not a bad thing at all. But we want to find out where people are. And I love that in this story, the people who put the Bible together and got to retell the stories over and over again kept this story in. Because you know what happens next? I kind of gave away the ending. There's all this newness. I'm not on either side. And what Joshua leads this new generation of men to do is to go commit genocide again. It's like, what was this angel inviting them into? What was this newness? And somehow, it feels like they didn't get it, or they didn't get the complete of it, because they went and did the very thing that they were already doing. We're going to go take this land, and they believe that God informed them to go commit genocide. And this is what I love about the Bible. It's messy. It's human. It's complicated. It's honest at times. It tells stories. And why did it tell these stories? Because the whole Bible is a collection. It's like a library of stories that are inspirational. Some of them can be historical. Some of them are metaphors. Some of them are deeply problematic. And why did they leave them in there? So that people who read it could say, oh, maybe we shouldn't repeat these same mistakes. Maybe this invitation of I'm not on this team or this team, I'm on whatever this God is doing in this newness, maybe they miss something, and maybe we can learn from it, we can be inspired about it. And this is the message, or this is our series of what's the deal? Of things that we want to agree upon, things that we want to hold true, things that we want to find people in our camp so we can know how to operate, so we can affirm each other's jokes, we can tolerate maybe the addiction of this group. We're saying, that's bad, but we're going to say this is good. The things that we choose to laugh at, the things we choose to demonize, we want to be affirmed, and that is a very human thing. And in places in life, you might feel, actually, I disagree. Or actually, I think differently. Actually, we might agree, but I'm like on the spectrum. I'm probably a little bit further away from where you are, but we don't want to voice it because we don't want to be excluded. We want to have that team. But here's the thing. When I was in that evangelical space, we were really good. And it felt really good. And for those of you who were a part of this, of knowing who's on your team, and when someone else tells you what is holy, what is good, and what is black and what is white, what is sacred and what is evil, there's a part of me that felt really good of saying, oh, someone else is doing the heavy lifting, someone else is doing the research, someone else is mining the depths of the Bible, and I just have to obey. And when you do that, there's a lot of consequences that can happen in there as well. And so what progressives do, what I did, is like, we're going to go away from those circles. We're going to go away from those, what is evil and what is good and what is included and what is excluded. And progressives, we like to think, oh, it's just wide open and like multiple truths can exist at once. But we still, and even in this church, I imagine as well, we can other people. And we can say, no, that's cute that you do that, but really you want to come over here. Right? It's really nice you have that feeling, but you're going to evolve and you're going to grow. And we can even play a catch-up game. Oh, Ross, it's really cute that you believe that, but just catch up. Wow, it's really, you have that thought? Wow, that's really wonderful. You'll catch up. And even by doing that, we are saying some people are further ahead in this journey. And if by further ahead, that means some people are winning and some people are losing, or some people are progressing towards real truth and other people are not. And we could have the same damage and similar consequences from one circle to a different circle. We've just changed the names. What I want to do in this series is, can we talk about some subjects? Oh, pause. I missed a huge point. What I'm not talking about is humanity, human rights. This is not something for me that is like, hey, like, we can be on different sides. We can be on different sides of, like, is Paul's wisdom so wise? We have different parts of when Jesus says this, is he talking about this group or this group? What to me is not debatable is when you put some humans over other humans. And as whiteness, we do this all the time. It is the world we swim in, right? I'm just like, oh, we're not, this isn't whiteness. This is just successful, right? Well, this isn't like privilege. This is just how we operate, all right? Until you see it, you can't see it. And once you see it, you can't unsee it, right? We do this, we do this in other areas, or churches do this in other areas. Do you know, actually, the first time I read this verse was in a book. And the book was meant to be like this progressive new way of thinking out of an evangelical framework. And they said hot topics like, how do we engage, and I say we in the book, these authors, how do we engage with the LGBTQIA community, right? And how do we handle this whole mystic thing called women in leadership, right? At one point, and I guess in some circles it still is, right? How do we handle abortion and women's right to choose healthcare for themselves, right? And again, all men, all white men who wrote this book. And I read it, and it was the beginning chapter went through this verse, and they're like, what we have to do is we have to take God's side, not our side or their side. They're still othering people. What I quickly learned was to take God's side is just don't talk about stuff. That was their strategy. Use language where people can be on different issues and then can come together. But really, if that queer person wants to get involved in student ministries because they felt so inspired and they want to lead other people, they should have thought about that before they chose to be gay. I don't believe that. I'm using it as an example. I probably should have picked a better example, right? Or women in ministry. Oh, it's great that you want to be a pastor. You should have just been a man. Then you really could have been a real pastor, right? And so just don't talk about it. Is there issue? And you know you have privilege when you continually benefit by being quiet. Right? That is how it works. And I learned, I'm like, oh, they're using this concept to benefit themselves over and over, because they did have policies, because they did know what they believed was right and wrong. And I felt cheated when I read that. I'm like, you're just using new language to continue to exclude people. And so in coming with this series, what I want is to be able to go through some ideas, concepts, values, maybe some theology, maybe some cultural issues that we don't always talk about. And this is a series we do every year, and we just changed the name. It used to be called Reimagine. And we're going to talk about like, did God really need to murder Jesus? If God is the Father and Jesus the Son, did the Father really need blood to spill and God to kill Jesus in order for us to have what we call salvation or eternal life or whatever word we want to use? And a lot of people were handed that way of thinking. A lot of people were handed ways of thinking about God or culture or reality or pleasure. And we just like, oh, I guess this is how it is, until you learn new things, until you find out there's other ways of existing. So here's what I'd like. If there's something you've always thought about, or things you're like, how come we don't talk about, or what about in the Bible, or what about in culture, or what about on the news or in politics, is there something you're like, where are we at? Because what we've said often is, what I believe is not what the church believes. It's not that kind of community. We are in wildly different places on a lot of different issues, which is the kind of church we've always wanted to lead. I wanted to be a place of where you hear a Bible verse, or you hear a story in the Bible, and you're like, oh, I remember when I was a kid, or I remember when I was a teenager, I remember when I was in my 40s, and whatever it might be, where you can bring that in. Because when you get to the subject of the Bible, America is not a Christian country. It's not, and for many different reasons. But it is a country that is a very culturally relevant thing, is Christianity, in all its forms, from toxic to traumatic to other expressions, that people might have some working idea because it's like on TV shows, it's in media. And so, example, Noah's Ark. You hear the word Noah's Ark, you might think of like a cute little white bearded guy with his arm around like the unicorn that doesn't exist, right? And like the alligator is like playing hopscotch with the mice, and it's a very cute kids' story, right? Because what kids like boats, they like beards, and they like animals, right? And I remember being a kid and learning about, I'm like, oh, this is, and it's about the promise of God. But like any story, choosing what to center changes the outcome. Like if you took January 6th, Noah's Ark and January 6th, you're welcome for that, right? Where you choose to start that story depends the outcome, because there's a whole group of people saying, we were just silently protesting. We were just doing our civil duty. This is what, we didn't do nothing wrong. We just walked in a building. It's our building. It's the public's building. People who start at that place can tell a very different story than someone like me who watched it, and I'll never forget it, right? And like, this is not a civil duty. That's where I choose to start the story. We do the same thing with the Bible. You start with Noah, beard, like little animals. Do you know where I start? I'm trying to see. Yeah, okay. Where I start, I want to make sure it's not too young of kids, is in this story, it says that God's hand closed the boat. And it always fascinated me. Why? Why in this story, God suddenly has hands? God doesn't have hands in other stories all the time. But God here has hands that can move and shut. And it says that God sealed it. Why? Because when it started to rain, this is where I start. Started to rain and water started pooling up, how many people ran to the boat and started pounding on the door? How many people were calling out their kids' names? Please take Jerry. Well, they wouldn't be called Jerry back then, but for the sake, right? Right? How many people tried getting to a tree or a high point and tried building some structure to get on that boat? All of a sudden, I think of panic, because this is a story of genocide. But where you start that story depends the outcome. And it baffles me now when people like you go into nurseries and they have the picture of Noah's Ark. I'm like, do you have any idea of what you were telling these kids, right? And that's, and honestly, we can be at different places, and that's okay. But what I want to process is, when we hear stories, we have questions. Why can't we process them? Can this be a place that's not about debating who's a better human than other humans? But can we have an honest discussion in places and be at different places on different issues? Because we should. When it comes to Paul, you might be at different places. When it comes to the wisdom of Christ and how you interpret, we might be in different places. And that is a healthy, healthy thing. Of what you think about conversion, what you think about resurrection, what you think about heaven. Rebecca last week talked about hell. We might be at different places. And what a beautiful thing. I want to have places of where we can say, well, it's the deal. Maybe airline food. Or it might be, do we still believe in conversion? Do you still believe that we have to go witness to our friends? I do. But what I am witnessing about has drastically changed, right? We can have different language. Oh, I'm really excited. So what I would love to hear from you is on those comment, the connection forms in front of you, you can email me, you can DM me, you can text me. My cell phone number is right outside on a card. Or you can come up and talk to me after. What are some things that you would like to process? And I might not have the perfect answer, but I'll do the research that I know how to do, and then we can have a conversation, we can have a dialogue about some of these issues. But where I'd like to end is this. Is throughout the day, or maybe this week, is hopefully to take some time and process what is really important to you. Where do you find grounding? And since this is the church and some concept of God, what is it about God that grounds you? And what has inspired you to get to that point? And maybe, what inspired you to move away from what you used to hold to be true? Because where I'm going to end is another Bible verse. In the New Testament, it talks often about how we're supposed to be kind, gentle, humble. How anger is not something to be celebrated. Would you agree? Right? To some degree, you'd agree, like we're supposed to be humble and kind and lower ourselves. And I still believe that until I read, and I don't remember, I totally lost my mind, a feminist theologian, and she said, that is great. Humble, lower your anger, quiet yourself, is great when the patriarchy is telling other men to do that. Because the Bible is written by men and for men. And what a wise thing to tell men, you need to chill out. Why? Because other groups of people, other demographics of people, have had to pay the consequences for men's anger and warmongering. How do we solve problems? I'll get bigger, I'll punch you in the nose, right? Whatever stereotype is true. And what this feminist theologian said is, that is a great message for men, but don't put what they wrote for men on us as women or marginalized people. And maybe what women need to hear is the exact opposite. Get up with the hands off. Rise up. Maybe a little holy trouble is what different demographics of people need, because they were suppressed and they were held down and they were told, get into the shadows. You be quiet. Right? I loved that, like, blew my mind of like, oh, there's things in the Bible that we can read and who it was written for and why that might inform some people but not all people. Oh, it's beautiful, it's liberating, it's inspiring. If we can be honest. And to be honest and be clear takes courage and takes time. So if you're here and the Bible is inspiring and you love it, and it's so great. I am in that category as well. If you're here and the Bible's problematic and it's messy and I pick it up once in a while, or you're something like the Bible, I'm never going to pick up again. All of it belongs and you belong. We do not need to agree on everything, but we can process and dream so that we can know better, do better, and be better. So I'm going to pray. Love to have you join me. So God, we love you. And since we're praying out loud, we ask for your blessing, all right? Big fans of that as well. But God, I pray that as we contemplate and we think and we process of what brings us grounding, what makes us feel included, what makes us feel sacred, what makes us feel safe, we say yes and amen to that. And I ask, Holy Spirit, that you would speak to us and highlight all those ways and those journey and those stories and even the scars that we carry to get to the place where we feel grounded, where we feel safe. And I equally ask that you'd help us be able to process what are some of the things that we're carrying with us that maybe we don't need to carry anymore? What are some of the things that we're holding on to that we're not even sure why this is where we choose to start with this idea? And that this can be a place and this can be a time of where we can process to experience not just truth so we can feel better, so we can just have a better idea of what God is, but so that we can be better neighbors, we can be better partners, better friends, better humans, more informed citizens, so that we can do the good and beautiful work that you're inviting us to be a part of. So we love you in your name. Amen. All right. Well, thank you for being a part of Neighborhood today, for being in this space. If you'd like to process, you'd like to pray, you'd like to share, I'll be here for the next like 20, 30 minutes. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.